time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 4th of June, 2011. Island Life is our weekly magazine show, focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life comes to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12, with the interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7pm and Thursdays at 12:30pm. On Saturday the 4th of June, we celebrated the opening of our new premises at 4 Karora Road. I talked to some of the people who have played a role in the history of radio on Waiheke, Martin Green and Barry Jenkin. We have a recording of the official opening with Don McKenzie from the local board. We hear live music from Naomi Perry. And there's the opinionated islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone. This is Island Life, and it is our official opening of the White House today, our second home. And we've been moving in gradually over the course of this year, setting the building up for a radio station, changing it from a residency to a radio station. And we thought it was a good time to look back over some of the history of radio on Waiheke. And to do that, we've got a guest here, Martin Green. Good morning, Martin.
G'day.
We'll just get you to move in a bit closer to that mic there.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, and Martin has been involved in radio and Waiheke in the past, and we thought we'd get you in to tell us a little bit about, a little bit of the history, really.
Well, yeah, where do you begin? I came to the island in about 1990, second time around, and I'd had some of my involvement with student radio, as I was saying to you before, and it seemed like a good idea to start a radio station in Waiheke. There was a gap in the market, you know. We didn't have one. Obviously, we needed one, or so I thought. And I rang up a friend of mine, Peter Young, who'd been on the island longer than I, and said, "Peter, let's start a radio station." And he thought that was a great idea and threw a lot of energy and effort into it. And I really didn't realise what we had done. he intended to run the thing as a business, and I think he learnt some hard, cold facts about running small businesses on islands, particularly where there's a relatively small market. The idea of a radio station polarised a lot of people. I mean, some thought it was fantastic. And I think every loony under the sun appears at your door, they're going to be the best DJ you've ever seen and never heard. And I honestly met some deeply, deeply weird people. I mean, even by Waiheke standards, we know the old saying is, believe nothing you hear and only half of what you see. It became very, very focused on the radio station. We had to understand that technologically things were probably not as sophisticated as you guys got. We had the genesis of digital technology with DAT tapes, digital audio tape, and we had CDs, but people were still spinning records and were very, very familiar with that. So signal strength fluctuated, and the cellular telephones were not as ubiquitous as they are now. So if you had a cell phone, you were instantly the friend of the radio station. And I remember a particularly weird event where they used to conduct, and I don't know if they still do, around the island yacht race. Do they still do that? I don't remember.
Yeah, I think they do.
And we decided, because they'd bought the Baruna, which was this vile old ferry that used to ply the waves around here, and managed to get Epiglass to paint the thing for free and to run around in it. They found that you could get to Auckland and back for $8 worth of diesel, which is interesting. But they decided that they would pursue the island yacht race in the Baruna, reporting in periodically from the one cell phone they'd sort of managed to steal off somebody. And a very strange fellow by the name of Teddy, very small, reasonably effeminate sort of joker, was the reporter. And it was okay as long as there was line of sight with Onira, but when they went round the corner, of course, cell phone transmission ended. But the big problem they had was in chasing the yacht race and trying to make it interesting was that the yachts were going faster than the Baruna. So by the time the Baruna got to about Onitangi, the yachts had all vanished. It was really, really, you know. But all sorts of things like that were done to try and stimulate interest and keep it going.
So how long did that, you started what, in 1990 you said?
It was about 1990, I think, yeah. 1990, 91, something like that, yeah.
And how long did that run for?
It sort of lurched on for 2 or 3 years, really. In the end, I think after the inevitable realisation, I suppose, the cold hard realisation that making money out of radio stations is not going to really happen in this sort of environment. A community environment, yes, but not in terms of making a living. And personalities being what they are and these sorts of things, with egos the size of this room, it became a one-man band in the end. And Peter had found that if you played death metal, because nobody else in the universe does, lots and lots of people send you lots and lots of free death metal to play. So he devoted the station entirely to death metal and talking to people,
right.
And set up a Pacific Parade in the house he was renting up there and played death metal to anybody who would listen to it. And I think eventually he gave up and went to Australia. So I probably went on for about 2 or 3 years, I suppose.
Yeah. And what were you called?
It was just called Island Radio.
Yep.
And it had call signs like, I think it was something like 99.2, not quite 100% was one of the, well, way out on the white of matter and yeah. things like that. It was.
And where did you broadcast
weird.
From?
Well, we initially, when Mitre 10 moved down to Ostend, which was now Placemakers, that building which is Artworks, which was really the timber store and Tony Pope's office, became vacant. So I rang him up and said, could we borrow his offices for the radio station? And it wasn't doing anything, and he was very generously let us use it. But after that, we moved into this building. So the radio station's come home, basically. We gutted this out and operated not quite from where you are. We were over there, closer to the wall, so we could look out the window and give accurate weather reports, tell people it was raining when it was and stuff like that. Even if it wasn't an onitang, it didn't really matter. And, it was quite fun for a while.
So how many people, you know, did you have a range of people coming in and
oh, yeah.
doing things?
Oh, yeah. Yep. There was a core sort of administrative person, and then there were two or three people that were permanent or semi-permanent. I think Grant Rosman worked for a while on the station. Then there was sort of this endless stream of itinerants, you know, people that would turn up and then want to be on the radio, would develop problems like swearing, and we'd have to suggest to them that swearing was really uncool, or smoking, and we kind of said, you don't smoke in here, you can go outside and smoke, but don't smoke in here. And people that really didn't have any work ethic whatsoever, but just wanted to be on the radio, and they wouldn't turn up the next time, and, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, it was just endless. It was just endless. People would replace people. You know, you probably have the same experiences here, do you?
I think that your earlier comment about that radio draws out those with interesting mindsets remains true.
Well, yeah, your words, not mine, but I agree with them.
Yeah,
I think I said something like freaks and weirdos, but pretty much the same thing, I suspect.
Yes. Okay, so in here, what did you do on the station? What was your role?
I lived in Waikari Road, right over the fence, so I was lucky enough to do the early morning show. So hop up here about 6 o'clock in the morning, scratching my bum and start talking to the world about whatever was happening. We were fortunate enough that the first Gulf War was on, so there's always something to get sanctimonious about. I recall on one occasion where Peter had decided to take it upon himself to make a series of sound bites all night, sitting up all night doing that, and then hadn't reassembled the equipment properly. So I sat in here with all the lights going and the meters moving and talking to myself, essentially, because they hadn't plugged the transmitter back in. They'd used the mixing desk for mixing things. So you sort of feel kind of stupid when someone rings you and says, it's not working. But yeah, so basically DJing, I guess.
And was your transmitter on the same site?
Yes, it was. It was in the room that I think is next to the
right.
Next
so you
to
would
bathroom.
Have been basically broadcast into Onirawa, Blackpool, Surfdale.
Yeah, Tiatia. But strangely enough, because the signal moves very well across water, so people were picking us up in Bucklands Beach, and we even got ratings at one point where. Was it Nielsen or whatever? They do these sort of ratings. There was a sort of a 6% I think we got to at one point, which was really, really interesting, because all we did were a bunch of people that indulge yourself by playing the music you like to listen, and you don't give a stuff what anybody else cares, because you want to play what you want to hear on the radio, which you never hear, and when you do hear, you sit there and rapt and listen to it. Good heavens. Sorry, there's a guy outside singing, which is interesting. Bob Dylan's still alive. But people listen. I don't know what it is, but the kind of music we were playing, people were listening to it, and it was interesting. In a couple of cases, we got the distinct impression that some of the radio stations and stands started copying the format and the style of what we were doing. It's just like you put on a record and go away and leave it and come back and then play all the ads for 2 minutes at the end of the hour and stuff like that. But anyway, dawdled on for a while.
Good fun.
Yeah, it was.
It is fun, isn't it?
Wakey Radio 107.4, 88.3. We're coming up to our opening ceremony. Yes, the opening ceremony of Waiheke's official 4 Karora Road. And I'm going to pass you over to Chris, who is outside, ready to make celebrations to begin. Chris, can you hear me?
I think we're on air now. Is that right, Trevor?
We're on air, Chris. You're live.
Has he got us? Yeah, okay. Hey, welcome along, everyone, to the official opening of Waiheke Radio's new studio at the White House. So we've been going for 2.5 years, and we've been lucky to have the support of the council in that, and we've been based down in Studio 5, down in Artworks, which was our first home. But it is fantastic to be up here, a much better premises, and much better for us to engage with the community, which is what we're all about. We do want to acknowledge the support of some people. We need to acknowledge the support of the former community board, who gave us some financial support, not only with setting up of the studio, but with a number of other of our endeavours in getting the station going over the last couple of years. And we're also really pleased to have along members today of the Waiheke Local Board, who have also been very supportive of the station, our community radio station. So we welcome along Joe Holmes, Faye Storer and Don McKenzie from the Local Board. And thank you to all of our sponsors. We have many, many sponsors from the community, businesses who see the benefit of having a community radio station and lend their financial support. There's too many of them to list at the moment, but we do really value the input of all of those sponsors, and without that we couldn't operate. And also to all of our volunteers. One of the things that people may not realise is the volunteers here at Waiheke Radio pay for the privilege of volunteering, and that's because we've got a great group of committed people who see the benefit of having a voice for our community on air. So thank you very much to all of them as well. So we're going to cut the ribbon in just a moment, but before we do, I'm going to hand over to Don to say a few words.
Thank you, Chris, and very nice to be here, because this is a very auspicious occasion, really. And on behalf of Faye Storer, Chair of the Local Committee, and my colleague Joe Holmes, and I apologise for Denise Roche and Jim Hannon, who are off on other ventures related to the board's activities. It's great to be here. I want to congratulate all of you involved, the trustees, the staff, and I know that you're all volunteers, for breathing new life into the White House, and for developing something which is a communications facility for the island. And I acknowledge in particular the vision and the drive of Chris Walker and the trustees. It's Chris's expertise, I suggest to you, that has carried this venture to the stage that it has currently reached. You know, this venture is great testimony to volunteerism at its best. It's really, truly a community project that's created a community asset, and I'm hopeful that this will be a step forward in taking Waiheke Community Radio to a new level. I understand that technically it's probably quite difficult to increase the coverage on the island, but nonetheless I think streaming into the future will be the way in which we receive radio. So the station first began broadcasting on the 28th of June 2008, and so you're not too far away from a third birthday, so that'll be another excuse for an occasion, and I hope you'll make the most of that. And you're now currently working with two pretty low-powered transmitters, and that's the essence of community-based radio. And I, along with Chris, acknowledge the foresight of the previous community committee in making money available for equipment, and also the expertise that came to bear from previous radio ventures on Waiheke, beach radio, and so on. There's probably some people here that were involved in that, and I understand that the history of radio on Waiheke goes back a good 25 years. So that's pretty characteristic of the island, I suggest, back to the old Hauraki days and so on, pirate radio. So it was pretty difficult for Waiheke to compete with the bidding of the multi-million dollar frequencies, and so it took a totally new tech, which seems to be working extraordinarily well. I want to acknowledge the input from the Auckland Council that has assisted with a good community lease for this project, and it's that sort of thing, along with your hard yakka, that has made this whole, that's transformed this building, breathed new life into it, and you know, these projects don't happen on their own. There's a lot of hard work, there's a lot of attention to detail, there's a lot of persistence that has to go on, and there's essentially a belief in what you're doing actually matters and makes a difference to the community, and that's really good. I just love your byline of local people, local knowledge. That's great. It's a great motto, and I think it wraps up in a way the purpose of the station, because you enable diverse elements within the community to do their own programming and to bring their views and thoughts to the community. You know, community radio is part of the Fourth Estate, and we shouldn't forget that. That's Vox Nostra, the voice of the people. It's the heart of our democracy. And it's a pretty tough call, really, to achieve a balanced programming that, in this digital age of instant communication. I think the station does very well in researching, from what I've heard so far, researching the cross the community type material that goes into making up a balanced program. Radio is, of course, a source of cultural expression, and radio actually is an art form in itself. You know, the continuity that goes into radio, the selection of the program, things that stretch the imagination, and those of us who are old enough to remember radio pre-TV know what a difference that made to our lives and how it did stretch our imagination. And just finally, I want to say this. Just remembering the devastation and from the Christchurch quakes, that's shown us the value of radio as a durable and reliable medium in civil defence and emergency management. And Waiheke Community Radio works well with our emergency services on the island, ready to take action as necessary. So there's a good close relationship there. So Waiheke Community Radio is an asset that we should actually value and nurture and actually participate in, really, because none of us ever know when radio is going to be the vital link between acting appropriately in emergency situations. So I just want to say on behalf of the local board, look, hats off to Waiheke Radio Trust, to all of you who've made this happen. All strength to you. We salute what you're doing, and I hope you can just keep making Waiheke Radio relevant so that it reflects the gifted and tolerant and caring community that we are. So I think Faye now is probably going to get her scissors out, is she? Okay. Or a knife, yeah, I'm not sure. Yes, yes.
I declare this new Waiheke Community Radio premises open.
And thank you very much, Don, for those kind words, and thank you very much, Faye, for officiating in our opening ceremony. Welcome along to all of you. The sausages are on the barbecue. We'd love you to come in and record a station ID so you can hear yourself on air. We'll have some live music for you soon as well, so please come on in. It's your station. One of the things we're doing this morning is we're looking back at the history of radio here on Waiheke Island. So we've got someone here who's been involved with radio not only on Waiheke, but really one of the iconic figures in New Zealand radio. Good morning, Barry Jenkin.
Good morning, Chris.
It's nice to hear that voice on air.
Well, yeah, it sticks out a bit, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it does. It's certainly one of the most recognisable radio voices in the country, really, isn't it?
Oh, I blame it, Dad.
Yeah. Now, I mean, your history in radio and kind of a pioneering history really has been well documented, but I thought it would be nice this morning to have a talk about, you know, Waiheke on radio on Waiheke and your involvement there, because really you provided a bit of a lifeline to radio on the island there for a while, didn't you?
Well, I did, yeah. I can't say it was the easiest thing in the world. It was partly an ego thing. I was over on Waiheke for 6 weeks. That was 6 years ago. Basically, I found that the station was for sale, and I thought, well, even on the smaller scale that it was, I'll never ever get a chance to own my own radio station because it requires many millions as a general rule. However, was a problem because the council regarded it as a commercial operation. Therefore, they charged full rent, which was coming out of my pocket with a vacuum cleaner in the back pocket. And sooner or later, I ran out of the readies, basically. However, with the volunteers, it went pretty well for a few years.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, what were the aspects you enjoyed about, you know, having, I suppose, a radio station at your fingertips?
Yeah, well, I'm probably the world's worst boss, but there wasn't much of discipline going on, but I didn't really need it because the volunteers were dedicated, and they came along and they did their gig. The problem was supporting it. The radio station, I think you probably remember, didn't have the best of reputations on one of its incarnations, and I think that probably there was a hangover from that. You know, promises to advertise and then not deliver. I was fighting the business community rather than being supported by it. Most unfortunate, but that's sort of the way it went.
And now, of course, you've once you moved on from radio, and you ventured into the business world on the island yourself. And again, I suppose with a bit of an involvement here with the station, with, you know, supporting us with our streaming.
Yeah, well, you know, there was it wasn't actually my idea in the first place, I have to say, but we had what was left over from the debacle of the radio station financially. So we just literally took a deep, big breath and chucked everything into what people didn't have, and that was decent radio internet speed. There was just absolutely nothing for anybody other than dial-up down the other end of the island, and fairly poor speeds everywhere else. So with the new technology coming along, 10 megabits at least, minimum, and now we're getting to the stage where 100 megabits is not exactly impossible.
Yeah, and it has been a lifeline really for a lot of businesses, hasn't it, having that access?
Look, it has. There's particularly down the eastern end of the island. We've got people now that don't have to work. They don't have to go to work on the ferry anymore. I mean, apart from maybe one or two days a week. Whereas before, they were the dedicated commuters. They had to be. There was no choice.
So back to radio for a moment. I suppose, you know, you had that pioneering role in mainstream radio, and you know, and they kind of gave you the shove there. You had a go at local radio, and probably feel like you got given the shove there.
Yeah, well, I certainly don't blame everybody else. I mean, certainly we have a fairly elderly, shall we say, demographic on this island, if you add it all up. And what I was providing wasn't necessarily what was wanted. The other problem, which was mentioned earlier, the big boys have got all the resources. They've got the news. They've got the staff, I guess, and it is pretty damned hard to compete with them. There's only one way to do it, and that is to get as local as possible, I suppose.
Yeah, and any feelings about that? You'd like to get back into it one day?
No, that's a no. No, I think I've had enough of... well, you know, I had a sort of three-year career sequentially. I would stay at a radio station, Hauraki, ZM. I kept swapping between the two, actually. They'd get sick of me after 3 years and give me the push, and then I'd go back to the other one. And that went on for about 9 years. I have to say, it wasn't what you call mainstream programming. But those were the days, you see, when a little bit of maverick was actually tolerated. It isn't these days.
So what do you think when you know, I don't know if you tune into some of those mainstream stations like Hauraki and that, I mean, what do you think when you hear those now?
I have no opinion whatever of Hauraki, although they are very slowly improving. At one time, they were playing 750 records. Excuse me, there are 7 million records in this world, and to play the same old thing at the same old time, you could practically set your watch by it. I also said they had, and still have, the laziest program director in the world.
Yeah.
In his office, there is a very large CD case, bookcase type thing, and there's about, quarter of an inch of dust on it.
Yeah. It's I suppose that, you know, the fact that all those stations have been bought up by just a couple of companies really has had a huge impact, hasn't it?
Well, that's what's happened. I mean, we're independent radio stations. I worked for one in Nelson over Christmas at one time. Snaffled them all. Far too much money. I've had it far too good for far too long. And quite literally any of the competition that raised its ugly head and raised its positive head got swallowed. There you are. Money has always meant far more than commitment to music.
Well, it was lovely to have you in and to hear your voice on air again, Barry.
Well, I wasn't quite expecting it there, Chris, but why not?
It's lovely to have you in, and we do thank you, of course. Barry and through Wynette, one of the many businesses who lend some support to the station, which is much appreciated.
Yeah, well, it's a little difficult with a low power FM. I've got a 500 watt transmitter sitting in my garage, which is totally useless, as a matter of fact. Because why?
Because we're not allowed to broadcast at full power.
Yes, yeah. Correct. And yeah, the
big boys can.
And the other problem, of course, is the Ministry of Economic Suppression. I'm sorry, Development, who are interested only in the size of your checkbook. And to that end, we now have two 500-watt Chinese radio stations on Waiheke Island. Anybody see the sense or the appropriateness of that? Give me a yell.
So when that came up, just finally, you know, because you were trying to buy the frequency at that time, so how much did it go for?
$380,000, the last one.
Wow.
I got zilch.
Yeah, it's pretty much out of reach of the community, isn't it?
It certainly is.
All right, thank you very much. It's Barry Jenkin, radio pioneer and former owner of The Beach, one of the stations which is part of the rich history of radio here
one
on
of the
island.
One of the many. I think I put the second transmitter up on Trigg Hill, far as I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
Yagi. It was a long time ago.
It was. Thank you very much, Barry, for joining us this morning.
Yeah.
Wakey Radio. With us is Leonie Perry. How are you, Leonie?
I'm great, yeah.
Yeah, so you've been busy playing around the island lately and doing bits and pieces.
Yep.
You just want to tilt your microphone down a little, just a touch. There you go. All right, so tell us a little bit about what you've been up to lately.
Well, I've recently played at the Waiheke Island International Jazz Festival with the Monal Prep Band, which was a lot of fun and good experience. Met a lot of musicians from all over the world, actually, and it's been really great. And just doing the odd gig here and there. Recently played at the Bay, and it's all good, yeah.
So you've been playing with, how old are you? What, 16?
I'm 18.
18.
18.
Yeah, but you've been playing with a lot of musicians considerably older than you as well, haven't you? So is that good playing with that kind of depth of experience? And
yeah, it's really good. It's helped me as a musician, and I've been able to develop my skills, I think.
Do you get nerves about kind of holding your own in that situation?
At first, when I was a lot younger, yeah, but definitely over the years, I'm feeling a lot more comfortable about performing with these musicians, and it's just nice synergy, you know. I love that.
Yeah. And where do you want to go with music? What do you want to do?
Well, hopefully be a recording artist, write some music. I'm working on music at the moment. And yeah, just develop it more, do more gigs. It's what I love to do. It's my passion. So it's my only plan. I have no backup plan.
Excellent. That's the way to do it. All right. Now, you're going to play a couple of songs for us today.
Yes.
Yeah. So what are we playing? What are you playing?
I'm going to be playing Blue Skies, perfect for a day like this.
Yep.
And All of Me, which are two jazz standards, which I really love. And yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I'll just leave it to you to take it away. This is Leonie Perry live on Waiheke Radio.
Every day was
Fantastic. And you're going to play another for us?
Yes.
Okay, take it away. Fantastic. That's Leone Perry live on Waiheke Radio. Thank you very much, Leone. Thanks for coming in on our opening day.
No worries.
And have you got a gig coming up that people can come along and see more?
No.
No.
Not currently.
You should. You should book something because everyone's listening and they're ready for more. Hey, thanks so much for coming in today and helping us out. All right, it's that time, the first Saturday of the month. We've kind of been a bit erratic in our days.
We certainly have. It feels like ages. Anyway, lovely studio.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
This really is beautiful.
Yeah,
what a fantastic
Alan
place.
Knight, welcome along, and Alex Stone.
Yeah,
great to be here.
Oh, good, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with these flash new places.
But
and
it certainly has been a while since we've done this. I mean, we've had...
the Royal Wedding.
We've had the Royal Wedding. Yeah. Has been and gone since we've been last on air. And, of course, the End of the World, which was supposed to happen and... somehow didn't. Funny that.
No, I missed that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was last Sunday, wasn't it?
Yes, I think it was. I, you know, a lot of people are sort of saying, well, you know, he's old and he's silly, and it's not really fair to go on at him. I mean, he doesn't really know what he's saying. I say rubbish. I think the guy should be flogged publicly by any satirist who feels like taking a swipe at him.
Yeah, but
The thing that fascinated me is, you know, I've always been interested in this whole rather cliched thing about these people who predict the end of the world and go and sit up on mountaintops waiting for it, and it doesn't happen, and then they've got to come down off the mountaintops and then go around to the neighbour's house and say, look, you know, we gave you our sofa the other day, we really need it back, sorry about this.
Also, the rationalisation post the non-event is also always a very interesting thing.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, this has happened so many times in the past, but usually quite a while ago. I mean, the Jehovah's Witnesses, I think they used to do it a lot, and then they got into one really big one in about 1916, and it didn't happen, and they said, right, we're actually getting out of the end of the world prediction business.
Well, there's no future in the
business.
There's
no future in it, but, you know, it's such a fascinating subject over the years to see the way people have done this, but this is the first time that it's happened in this sort of modern digital age where we actually get to look at this from so many angles.
Yeah, we could have recorded the end of the world on Twitter and Tweeter and you name it.
People were. I mean, I was following some of the sort of Twitter and Facebook things that were going on at the time, and they were just hilarious.
Mm. I think what's also interesting about end of the world's predictions is it's a lovely media standard. You know, this guy is some nondescript pastor with 50, you know, like he's small biscuits, really. But the guy makes the story, makes the prediction, and suddenly the world is like with it. It's a great story to hook onto. And at the same time, there are huge stories throughout the world that just get ignored because this is kind of an amusing little incident. But like the Wellywood sign, you know, like,
yes, yeah.
We've got bigger issues, but somehow that one catches
it. It was fascinating to watch it all play out.
Yeah.
But of course, now speaking of potential disasters, I mean, if the world had ended, I mean, personally, I felt I was in the best spot. 6 o'clock last Saturday night, there I was on Waiheke Island, nice warm fire and a lovely pint of beer. Oh, and a plate of local oysters.
Yeah, what a way
to go. If the world had ended at that point, I'd have gone, well, there's worse ways to go.
Yeah, maybe it has ended. Maybe we're living in like a netherworld now. Maybe this is the, what's that part before you go to heaven? Is this our purgatory? Is this our, what's the bit where you said?
Purgatory.
But yeah, this is our purgatory now, maybe. There's a thought.
It's pretty nice if it is.
Yeah, that's right. We can live with it.
So one of you mentioned the Wellywood sign in there. What do you take on that?
Oh, it looks really tacky to me. Bad idea.
I did a bit of research during the week. I wrote it in my column that Wellington shouldn't have the sign because Auckland's sister city is Los Angeles, which is more kind of in keeping. You know, Auckland's sister cities are Brisbane and Los Angeles, which go with the sort of glamour, you know, the glitzy, the tinsely effect of the cities. So if anyone should have we should have a Jaffa Wood sign on the slopes of Rangitoto, because we are the sister city of Los Angeles, not Wellington. So they try hard. It's just the total try hard thing.
It was, lot of cultural cringe involved in that. Yeah, I found myself turning the TV off whenever it came on.
But what the hell?
I don't want to hear anything more about this.
Do you think the anti-faction got a bit try hard themselves? Maybe they should have just put it up and laughed about it, or put it up and graffitied it, or put it up and changed the spelling or something. You know, maybe we could have dealt with it with a bit more humour. I mean, you're right. It is tragic, but why not? We need some of these tragic events. Tragicomic events.
No, the hillside of Matiatea, where you come on the ferry, is just calling out for big white letters.
What? Yes. What would it say though?
Oh, well,
yeah, something would. Well, Jaffa would be, you know, that's the Auckland thing. But what is Waiheke? We have our USP, don't we? What is our USP?
What's a USP?
Unique selling point. Position.
Oh, do we?
Well, yeah. I've always felt that with something like over 30 wineries. And a brewery, and now of course the island rum. Our tag should be
Piscatwood.
Yes, who wants to come out of Waiheke and get drunk?
That sounds good. Yeah, like it could almost be like a padded cell for drunks, because we could ship them in and then cut off the ferries and they can rattle around here and come to no real harm.
It sounds like Stony Ridge on New Year's Eve.
Oh, we're doing it already. You mean? Whoops.
So something like Waiheke Island. If you know a better place to get drunk, we'd like to hear about it.
Yeah.
Now, there's an interesting thing that came up last week. speaking of Martyr and so forth, it was all this stuff about the civil defence exercise.
Yeah.
And I was quite amused by this because I found myself involved down at the Murrah Hall. I'm on the Murrah Hall committee, and Murrah Hall was chosen as one of the venues that was relevant to this particular exercise. And if you read about it in the paper, the whole thing was... a ferry had gone over a smaller boat just outside the harbour, fatalities, drownings, people still being picked out of the water and so forth. And everything seemed to be ticking along quite nicely. I mean, the community board had it all in order in Ostend there and they were working on everything. But the one thing that we found was the Red Cross, around whom a lot of this stuff depended, you know, supply of blankets and soup and so forth, the Red Cross were entirely unavailable on the day. So we're all sitting there going, well, you know, we'd love to do something, but unfortunately we can't get hold of the Red Cross.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever wanted to phone the cops late at night. You get a recorded message in town. You know, you can't get through to the cops at night.
No.
On the island. So
no, you wouldn't.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think the big issue with a civil defence exercise here would be if something really bad happens, chances are it would happen when there are 1,000 or so Waihikians in Auckland with no way of getting back. You know, so we'd have a lot of able-bodied people stuck in Auckland.
Yes, yeah, I think that was one of the things we did touch on during the exercise.
I know our family's got a little routine that if something happens... Those parts of the family that are in Auckland will go and commandeer a boat at one of the marinas and get back here, because at least here we can operate on water and spinach. And
well, it's either that or put a pair of flippers in your bag when you
yeah.
go to
try swim back. Yeah.
Well, I don't know about you, but do you feel that as immigrants to New Zealand, we perhaps take the civil defence stuff a little more seriously than the natives do?
Yeah, maybe,
the impression sometimes you see all these surveys where people are surveyed. You know, are you ready for a disaster? And most of them going no.
Have you got the bag in your? Have you got a bag in
absolutely.
The house?
Absolutely. Yeah. Our civil defence preparedness at our place is first rate.
Ah, good on you.
If something nasty happens, we're ready.
Yeah,
we have everything we need to get through.
On Waiheke, we pretty every house has got a couple of 1,000 litres of fresh water to start with.
Well, yes,
you know? And there's probably enough veggies and mussels and stuff.
But I do get the impression that people born in New Zealand tend to just... It's just background chatter. Oh, yeah, you know, one day a volcano might go pop or there'll be a great big earthquake. We'll deal with it as it comes along.
Well, I think it's a standard thing with humans everywhere. I mean, in history, there have been so many examples of a volcano going off, and then the people move, you know, a village gets obliterated, and immediately the people move back into the same village.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do it everywhere, around the world.
Yep. So. Well, I mean, you know, where are they rebuilding Christchurch?
The human race, and failing to learn from experience for several glorious millennia.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a big call. You know, where else would you rebuild Christchurch? You know, because it is a miserable spot, you know, there in the swamp and everything. But
speaking of disasters, I thought probably the funniest thing to come out of the cover, well, not really funny. I mean, it was kind of tragic, really, that the Gulf News, having picked up on the fact that the Red Cross were unavailable, and that was one of the main weaknesses of the whole exercise last week. You would have thought that they could have crossed the road and knocked on the Red Cross's door to find out what the problem was, but no, they didn't. They left us hanging on that one. Nice one, Gulf News.
So did you ever get to the bottom of that and find out what happened to the Red Cross?
No, I opened the paper to try and find out, but the paper didn't seem to think it was
that important.
I suppose
it shows the importance of having an exercise then, doesn't it?
Well, yes, it did. Yeah. Very definitely.
Mm, yeah. I believe we were involved with that in some way.
You were.
Mm. Oh, we could all
did we do all right?
I think you did, yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah, everyone except the Red Cross got a pat on the back, apparently. Yeah.
Oh, well, next time then, eh? We'll just make sure they're...
So you might not have had a blanket, but you would have been able to listen to some tunes.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Well, in an emergency, there's nothing better than sitting around a campfire and singing a selection of our favourites, eh?
Yeah.
Why not?
That's
our
approach.
I think we'd do right. I think you'd be, as Alan said earlier, we're in the best place in the world to handle any... You know, if the world comes to an end, we're in the best place.
Yeah,
no doubt very definitely. About that. Yeah.
So what else has been on your minds over the last month or so?
Well, it's been interesting looking at the budget.
Yeah.
I know we were all sitting around discussing this last night.
Yeah, very muted response, and I think we owe it to ourselves a little bit more intelligent response, I think. What do you think, Alan?
Well, I think first and foremost, there seems to be, and you're saying everyone is conforming to a certain narrative here, but I think the most important part of that narrative is there is no money left. The credit card is maxed out. We've just lost the infrastructure of the second biggest city in the country, and that's going to need rebuilding.
Yeah.
Fuel prices have never been higher, and we're in a global downturn. Yeah. I think most people realised as that budget was rolled out that there wasn't going to be any jam this year.
Yeah.
And there sure wasn't.
Well, it'd be an interesting exercise for all of us to live for a year without any luxuries. You know, maybe it would be a nice sort of ascetic cleansing process. You know?
Well, interestingly enough, there is there was a speech given this week by the Britain's only Green MP, who suggested that a couple of years of wartime style austerity would be just the thing we need to sort of get us all back on our feet and just live with no frills for a couple of years. As you say, an almost ascetic exercise
I wonder if we'd cope with it. You know, would our teenagers be better off with a, you know, living a simple life and
yeah, sort of go back to 1960s style broadcasting for a start.
No, I think we could stay with what we've got here. Yeah, this maybe this is 1960s style.
Oh, we can do that. Trevor's on at 12 o'clock.
But yeah, I think austerity would be a good thing. I reckon we'd
everyone would have to try doing those posh broadcaster voices they did in the 60s.
Yeah.
Even in New Zealand, you still had to sound like a Brit.
Like I said, Trevor's on at 12 o'clock.
Right.
But, you know, I think just if we tease this out a bit, you know, if we had a couple of years of a supposed austerity, it would mean less flash cars or less of, you know, the flash stuff. But there could be an amazing explosion of a cappella music or community fun groups or walking on the beaches or just there's a lot of simple fun stuff that
campfire
is actually free.
And all sorts. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Sitting around campfires, you know, and I reckon our quality of life could improve.
It sounds to me.
If everyone cut up their credit cards tomorrow.
Walking on the beach, it sounds like one of those Love Wanted ads in the paper.
Yeah, well, that wanted a partner in austerity.
Mm.
Could you cope with less of flash stuff, less shopping? You know, there's going to be... We're going to park the car for the next 2 years and stroll around arm in arm.
But I think it was quite good, though, that the general response to the budget was, well, you know, what else do you expect at this stage? There was no way that money could be found for pretty much anything.
Yeah.
And I think even Phil Goff, because, of course, you know, it's traditional that the leader of the opposition
has a go.
Already has their speech already rubbishing whatever the Chancellor has said.
Yeah.
But even Phil Goff, you could sort of see it in his face. It's like, well, to be honest, we couldn't have come up with anything better this time round. There is no money.
Yeah, I'd like to go beyond that particular narrative. I think the failings of this government, which I think are many and hidden at the moment, I think they've got nothing to do with the budget. They're other things. They're things to do with integrity, forward vision, assault on the environment, Ann Tolley's complete mismanagement. There are a lot of things that this government is failing on, but are being hidden behind the nice smile of the leader.
Mm.
And I think maybe let's look at that. You know, I'd like to take these guys to task and maybe get over the honeymoon the media's given them for so long. There's a lot of stuff that ain't working.
Well, maybe rather than taking National to task, I mean, National really are only doing what National are...
Yeah, they do what they're
designed to do.
In a lukewarm sort of way.
Why not take the opposition to task for looking like they've pretty much thrown in the towel on this election already? Their hearts are not in it.
Yeah, but this is what we were talking about last night. You know, a guy around the pub last night was saying it's a one-horse race. And I think it's too early to say that because a lot can happen between now and November. You know, even putting aside the possibility of the All Blacks going out in the quarterfinals, this whole Auckland, the way the government's sabotaging the Auckland transport dreams could rebound on them really seriously.
Yeah, it's going to have to do it pretty quickly, though. I
mean, it could happen.
We're not far off from the election, but it does appear to me that Labour they don't have the stomach for the fight this time around.
I think they need to leap on it. But I think, you know, the touches of hubris that the government is showing could easily lead to something of a meltdown. And Stephen Joyce is making a bit of an ass of himself over this public transport thing.
Mm.
You know, they talked about being the guys who would get this country working, help business, help us going. This is an exact this project, the underground rail loop, is exactly that. But these guys don't have the vision to do that, you know. So I think they could fall on a few things between now and November.
Well, it will. It certainly will be interesting, and I'm sure we'll keep coming back to this over the next few months.
Just look at the numbers. They're sitting on 53 at the moment, Labour on 36. National could easily lose 8%. Labour could easily gain maybe 5 or 6. And people are saying it's not unlikely that the Greens could gain, could get up to 8 or 10. So if Labour gains a couple...
At this stage, I wouldn't say... Well, say
Labour gets up to near 40...
Oh, incidentally, speaking of the Greens, congratulations to Denise Roche for getting so high on the party list.
Well, that's if they get the 10%, of course. Yes.
So she's number 11.
11
so
on the list, yeah.
What do they need for her to get
10%,
up?
10%.
Yeah. Well, which they've never got. Have they?
Well, they got 8.8 once.
Yeah.
Or a constituency seat, of course, but...
Yeah, there's
no chance.
Well, the Greens...
I see that happening.
They're not campaigning for constituency. They're doing a one-tick campaign vote for the party. So I think they could get 10. There's something of a groundswell against the current government's environmental record, and 10% could easily... 10% support for the Greens could easily come out of that.
Do you think, though, that the Greens actually have any really good rallying cries for this particular election? Have they got any real issues that are going to...
Yeah, I think they do. I think
light it up for them.
The degradation of order throughout the country is a big issue, and it was highlighted just a week or two ago in the Listener about the government's water report on water situation was actually completely inadequate. And... New Zealand is incredibly resource rich in things like wind and water, which are the rallying cries for the Greens. We are the Saudi Arabia of wind energy. We are the country blessed with the most supply of fresh water, but we're degrading it very rapidly. The government could also fall with the mining under national parks. You saw the groundswell there, and those are three planks that the Greens could easily turn into rallying cries.
It's not quite as exciting as say genetic modification. I mean that was a far better one for them to get the teeth into. I wonder if the Greens actually have enough zing in their campaign this time around.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Do they really have the issues?
Yeah, be interesting.
And I'm sure that you know as the year goes on, there's going to be plenty in there for us to chew over.
Yeah. Well, I do hope so. I mean, I was thinking when this election was announced, gosh, this is going to be a very boring election year.
Yeah.
And you know, I relish a good election. Like a wonderful sporting event, and I'd hate to think that this was just going to be the one horse race.
Well, let's not make it boring. That's my point. Let's go beyond the standard narrative and start looking sharply at the government's. They haven't even been able. They promised a bicycle trail, and they haven't even been built that. You know, like that, how slack they are. Mm. So let's get onto it. You know, let's get some efficient opposition going, and I think let's get into some serious thinking about how MMP can work for us. Don Brash aside. Yeah, that'll be another interesting one. Whether you know, it's kind of ironic that he's using MMP to his advantage when he's campaigned all his life against it. You know, but you know, here he puts up banks for Ipsum when he knows that he couldn't get in because you know he's an interesting character, lovely circular logic.
I was just disgusted by that whole thing. Yeah, they've lost my vote.
Yeah, well, there you go. Things are changing.
Yeah.
Guy around the pub last night said National had lost his vote. He's going back to Labour. You said ACT has lost your vote. Things are changing. So if I'm talking about a 6 or 8% swing either way, National down, Labour up, plus 10% Greens, suddenly it's a close race.
Yeah.
So I think if the community of New Zealand starts looking at issues clearly, and the environment is a really big one for the future, we could have a good close race and a kind of a stimulating election. The incumbents are...
Let's hope so. That would be exciting.
The incumbents are not as comfortable as they appear because the appearance is all just like a facade of one man's smile. And it's the reality is a lot more than that.
And there we go. Alex Stone has said it all. If everything changes, it could be different.
Yes! Things certainly were different before these newfangled changes.
You heard it here first, didn't you?
Yes.
Maybe I'm just an optimist. I mean, it's an eternal idealist.
Well, of course you are. You're living on Waiheke. Why wouldn't you be an optimist if you lived here?
That's our sign. That's our sign. Island of idealists.
Yes.
Idealist would.
Optimist would.
Optimist would.
Hmm.
Something like that.
Okay. Alan Knight and Alex Stone, the Opinionated Islanders, welcome along to your first session in the new studio.
Yeah, well, great to be here.
I'm off to go and build the sign. I'm not quite sure if Optimist would. I'll figure out something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll be back, Alan and Alex will be back next month, first Saturday of the month, for more opinions. The Opinionated Islanders. Thanks very much.
See you then. Yeah. Opinions. Yeah, see ya.
You've been listening to the interviews from last week's Island Life. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. We bring it to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with the interviews replayed on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Or they're available as a podcast at www.waihekeradio.org.nz.